our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. If anybody needs Pokemon cards, I'm your man.
Whatever little respect I had left for you, Mike, is out the window.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Jose Reyes, the guy who treats his women right. and I think totally sarcastic about that. I realize that I'm on radio and no one really knows me.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
First off, can we stop saying package every 2 seconds because it's getting outrageous?
You're playing on the Cincinnati Reds. This team is going absolutely nowhere. Do not run into fucking walls, people.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 149 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Join with me on this episode is Mike Warner and Matt Thompson. Mike, how you doing?
Doing well. I just found out that I possibly have a fortune on my hands with my old Pokemon cards when I was a kid. So I'm ecstatic right now. If anybody needs Pokemon cards, I'm your man.
Yeah, if you're into Pokemon and you need to collect some Pokemon cards from what I'm assuming the 90s, hit up Mike at Mike Warner, FWFB on Twitter, and see his old collection. I'm sure they're still stuck together.
Man. I know Yancey was a big fan of Pokemon, so you know we haven't talked about Yancey in a while, but you know, shout out to him.
Also joining us is Matt Thompson. Matt, how are you?
I'm just shaking my head, man. Whatever little respect I had left for you, Mike, is out the window.
That is not surprising. Well, it's a little surprising it's taken as long as it has.
If anyone wants to be on a prospect pie with me on Sundays, then hit me up because I'm no longer doing it with him.
Yeah, well, I would do it, but I don't like pronouncing names I don't already know. I have a hard enough time pronouncing the ones I do know.
I can't wait for you to say the second guy on our list. See if you can do that one today.
Jose Ramirez?
The second one.
I added a name to the list. So
The third one.
Yeah, no, don't worry. I can get Hisashi Okuma. but joining us today is Paul Kostava from Fangraphs. Paul, how are you doing?
I'm making it, man. I just witnessed the Mets actually try to do a hit and run, and they hit into a double play. So I have a feeling that's how my night's going to go for the rest of the night right now.
That sounds very Mets-like.
Very Mets-like. Jose Reyes trying to run, and yeah, already into a double play. So we're off to a rolling start. A roaring
start. Carlos Gomez will fit right in then, huh?
Oh, man.
He's going to Marlins.
The Cardinals are after him, too, so we'll see. We'll see who the biggest loser is the one that signs him.
Well, speaking of the Marlins, let's just go ahead and jump right in to talking about kind of the big news of that broke yesterday. That's Giancarlo Stanton is done for the season with a groin injury. They've decided they're not going to try to bring him back. Mike, what are your thoughts on Giancarlo Stanton's value for next season?
Man, this is just like a continuation of what we've been talking about with Stanton for years now. I feel like it's always been the same. You know, we know that when Stanton is healthy, he is, if not the best, one of the best power hitters in baseball. He is personally my favorite player, so there's no way that I'll ever be off of him. But at the end of the day here, you know, we're looking at one season over the last four or five, actually, where he's had more than 500 at-bats. And, I he was going pretty much borderline first rounds, you know, going into this year, which I know all of us pretty much were not really advocating on this podcast. Going into next year, I don't think that you can, you know, draft him within the first three rounds or pay more than $20 in a mixed league. I think that personally, he's more of a fourth to fifth round pick for me and somebody that I would probably pay in the teens, maybe higher teens for in auctions. You know, obviously there's a long way to go in the offseason, so we have to kind of gauge where he'll be at health-wise. But this isn't a good sign. You know, yet again, a season cut short for Stanton that, you know, it's really unfortunate because we really could see him hit more than 50 home runs. I mean, he hasn't even hit 40 yet, but we could really see him hit 50 or more if he was just to stay healthy. But I'm really concerned that it'll never happen.
Paul, what are your thoughts on Stanton coming into next season?
I agree that his value, we have to really, really skew it. He was going in first rounds in a lot of leagues. But there's a reality here. Is he the Rich Harden of hitters right now, where we expect so much from him to come through? And I think he's averaged, you know, less than 500 plate appearances in his last 3 to 4 seasons. Even this year, with someone who hasn't hit the DL that much before this injury, according to ESPN's player rater, he's only 38th. So even with the performance, you're still kind of hoping to catch that lightning in the bottle that we really haven't seen enough of this year to justify high picks, especially with the depth in the outfield that's available.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Stanton moving forward?
Yeah, he's pretty much solidified a spot on my do not draft list for me. I'm very risk averse in the first couple rounds of the draft, and I think he's got more name value than he should have, and he's going to go a bit too high for my blood in fantasy drafts next year. It's unfortunate because, I mean, the 50 home run upside is tantalizing, but I'm starting to think it might never happen. I mean, I know he's only going to be 27 next year, but guy can't stay in the field, man. It's becoming a problem if it isn't already. And the contact rate is at 66%, and that's not good either.
Yeah, I'm getting to the point where, I mean, I was low on Stanton compared to, I think, a lot of the industry, as I think we all were here. But one of my biggest issues is even when he is healthy and he offers the power potential, it's kind of empty power. I mean, let's be honest. He's hitting 259 this year. He hit 244 last year. Hit 265 the year before. He has a total of four stolen bases between this year and last year. This isn't a guy that's offering, you know, complete overall production anymore. So, I mean, how much different is he than Chris Davis of the Orioles?
Yeah, or Adam Duvall, you know.
You know, I mean, yeah, Chris Davis could hit 50 also, but does that mean you're taking him in the first three rounds? I don't know if Stanton is a top 50 player anymore coming into drafts.
I think the name value carries him higher than that, but I mean, he shouldn't be.
No, of course, the name value does. But Paul, will he be in your top 50 in ranks next year?
Just thinking off the top of my head, I probably wouldn't. And just because I'm also really not putting a premium on power as much, because there's so much power out there. I mean, when you really look at the numbers, there's so many more guys with 20 home runs. If I'm going top 50 outfield, I got to start looking at those stolen base premiums, because those are becoming much harder to come by these days.
Yeah, I think the power kind of boom we've seen in the last two seasons, the lack of speed that Stanton offers in the fantasy game, And the bad average. I mean, you know, it's not a killer average. It's not like he's Chris with a K Davis and offering, you know, that kind of, or Chris Carter, those kind of averages. But the power isn't so immense that you can't get that from somewhere else. Because Chris with a K Davis has 30 home runs in Oakland. So if that's all you're getting, and then you throw in the injury. The injury problems on top of it. And I mean, I'm going to be hard pressed to get Stanton in my top 75 next year for my ranks.
Do you put any premium on his spot in the lineup with some high OBP guys hitting ahead of him and the RBI potential with him? Does that boost it a little bit?
I mean, it boosts it a little bit because it's not completely empty. You know, the power isn't completely empty, but I mean, you know, he's got 52 runs scored, 70 RBIs. He plays in the middle of a decent lineup, so that's nice. But I think, I mean, especially if you're playing in a deeper format, if you're playing in NL only, if you're playing in 15-man leagues, you have to downgrade him because you can't be guaranteed he's going to get to 500 plate appearances, much less 600. And then he doesn't offer all-around production. People are going, you know, I listened to Jason Collette and Paul Sporer, your buddies on the Sleeper in the Bus podcast, have this discussion on their Sunday podcast. And Jason was talking about how he was thinking about keeping Stanton in an NL only for like $45. And there's inflation and all that. That's just a huge portion of your budget that you have to spend on a guy that isn't guaranteed to offer that kind of production back with no speed, with an injury history now that we have to start calling him injury prone. I mean, I kind of laughed off the idea that he was injury prone coming into this year, because I felt like a lot of the injuries were fluky. And I still feel like this injury was a tad bit fluky, but at some point there's a common denominator, and that's his body's not holding up to a full season.
Yeah, he's getting into that Troy Tulowitzki zone where you really, before he got to Toronto, where you really expected these great numbers, you were paying for that premium, but he just wasn't staying on the field, so you kept getting crushed, especially in these auction leagues where he was going for 40, 45. And I think Giancarlo you can get for under 40 at this point.
Yeah, I wouldn't, in an average league, I would not pay $40 for Stanton in an NL only. I just wouldn't do it. Let's go ahead and move on to the next guy on our list. That is Jose Ramirez. Matt, what are your thoughts on Jose Ramirez so far, and then kind of moving into next year, where you could see him ranked?
I like the bet, man. These kids impress me. He's 23 years old. He's putting up good numbers. He's going to be eligible next year at second base, third base, and outfield, and maybe shortstop, depending on your league. And he's going to be a nice sneaky guy to put in your second base spot next year. He's going to be the regular third baseman. He can hit 10 homers and steal 20 bags and hit somebody with a decent average. I mean, there's nothing not to like about this kid. You're not going to be paying premium for him. Even next year, I think he's still going to be one of the under the radar guys. He's red hot right now. I think he's got about a 18-game hitting streak or so going on right now, if that's correct. I like this guy. I like players like this. He's kind of like a mini Ben Zobrist, can kind of play anywhere and provide nice numbers overall. So nice sneaky ad for next year, too, like I said, with playing second as a regular third baseman. So that'll be nice.
Paul, what are your thoughts on Jose Ramirez for this year and then going into next season?
I love the position eligibility. Guys like this, especially if you're in these daily lineup leagues where you got to mix your lineup up, and then there's guys off days and on days. He's a great asset this year. I'm a little concerned with the drop in the walk rate. He's right now at about 7.5%, down from 9% last year. And I think he is benefiting from a higher BABIP than we've seen before. He's at 339. So he's still young enough that he doesn't necessarily not own these numbers, but I'm a little hesitant making him and I don't think anyone's recommending you make him a centerpiece or anything like that, but I'm definitely concerned that if he doesn't get that BABIP goes down, that could definitely deter a significant amount of his value. But the stolen bases are nice. I like the lineup he's in. That's something I always consider with these guys. He has 64 runs scored, and in that Cleveland lineup, I think that's a good spot for him. But again, if that BABIP goes down and his average loses a little bit, you kind of lose some of his value there.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Jose Ramirez moving forward?
I like him a lot. Last year, we actually saw him start to do what he's doing this year in 2015 in September. He ended up hitting 306, 368, 629, and 62 at-bats. He had four home runs. No stolen bases, but then he's come into this season, and you guys have kind of highlighted a lot of what he's done. Since it's turned into the second half this year, he is number eight or number seven among all players in stolen bases. He has eight since the second half has started. That's approximately 21 behind Billy Hamilton, but that's neither here nor there. But this year he wasn't even drafted. I mean, he was like outside of the top 420 picks. He's been the second best shortstop if you do shortstop eligibility over the last month, according to the ESPN player rater. His contact rate is good enough that I'm not really worried about the BABIP concerns. It is a little bit of a concern, him having a 340 BABIP right now, but his career line is, about at 300. So, I mean, even if it ticks down, he can be more of a 270 hitter as opposed to a 315 guy, which he is at this current moment. I'm not really worried about the walk rate either because it's only 1% down from last season. So I think that this is a guy that, I love the eligibility. He probably won't get shortstop eligibility in most leagues. He's going to be more so a third base and outfield eligible guy, which is nice. I mean, it's nice to have the dual eligibility there. And, the fact that, at least for the rest of this year, he's going to be hitting fifth in a lineup that we didn't think would be that great, but has been okay in the Cleveland Indians. It's a pretty good run-producing spot. It's a good place to score runs. They're obviously letting him steal more than he ever has before in his career. I mean, if he's going outside the top, 150, 180 players next year, I'm going to be completely all in.
Yeah, and I think he will. I think the name value has not caught up with the production yet. So I don't think you're going to have to spend a whole lot on draft day next season. I think a lot of people are looking at this as a fluke. And I think there are reasons to believe that he won't be this good next season. But obviously, the positional eligibility and the speed combination make him a legit fantasy asset. He's kind of turning into a young version of Zobrist, you know, what Zobrist used to do with the Rays, where he could play, you know, a bunch of different positions, including middle infield, and do a lot of different things, and really went unappreciated on draft day for a long time. He's only 23 years old, so he'll be 24 in about 2 months. So going into next season, he'll be 24. There's still potential for him to grow, maybe add a little bit more pop, and still kind of maintain a lot of what we've seen this year. Does he hit 315? No, I'll probably project him out to hit, you know, 280 next season. But 280 with 20, 25 steals and 10 home runs at multiple positions is pretty nice value, especially in your deeper formats. Let's talk about Hisashi Iwakuma. He had a kind of a off start. I mean, it wasn't awful against the A's in his last start, but before that, he had turned in two really nice starts. Paul, I want to hear what your thoughts on Hisashi Iwakuma are for the rest of the season and moving into next year.
He's a guy he's kind of an enigma for me, because one of the things with Iwakuma is sometimes I like those high K guys. I think we all really appreciate those high K guys. And you just worry that at some point, kind of like the Oakland start, like certain things are going to implode a little bit. I'm seeing some downside in some of the metrics, but nothing significant, where we're seeing a little bit of drop in the K per nine, a little up in the walks. FIP isn't loving him as much as they usually do. But he's a guy that you don't want to bet against. He still has the savvy that when he's on the hill, he's a really smart pitcher. He's really effective. I'm definitely still looking at him. I would say definitely in my 12-15s, you know, he's definitely going to be obviously rostered. But I'm a little cautious with him. I'm definitely cautious for next year with some of those dropping Ks. But I'm not staying fully away from him based on just that, because I think he's the type of guy that's going to age very well with with his skill set.
The only thing I worry about is the constant rumors of injury issues. I mean, he had injury issues that nullified his original deal to come over to Major League Baseball. He had an injury issue that popped up in his physical that nullified his deal to the Dodgers. He's going to be back with Seattle. I know he signed a 1-year deal, but he has two vesting options for 2017 and 2018. He's going to hit the amount of innings. I think he's only about 12 away to get that vesting option for the Mariners. So he'll be back in Seattle, which is a plus for me because I like that park. I like the offense behind him in terms of his win potential. But he's a guy, he's 35 years old right now. He hasn't been great all season. He's been very up and down. I don't like the underlying numbers, a FIP and ex-FIP that are a bit higher than his ERA. He doesn't offer a ton of strikeouts anymore. He's walking pretty much at the highest rate of his career outside of his first season in Major League Baseball. I just don't trust it. You know, you say he's not a guy you want to bet against. I think I don't want to be holding the bag when he blows up. So he doesn't have enough upside for me to take the risk. Matt, what are your thoughts?
I'm on Team Justin on this one, man. All of his numbers for me are running in the wrong direction. The K's are down. The walks are up. The home runs are up a little bit. The ground balls are down. That's kind of telling to me. The velocity's down. Yeah, I mean, he's been a nice little added bonus in wins leagues because he's got 8 wins in his last 10 starts. I mean, you can't really bank on that, obviously. I mean, you're not going to go chasing wins, but that's been pretty much what his value is for you right now because he's not getting strikeouts. He's very Jeff Suponish for me right now, and I don't. That's not very fantasy exciting.
Man, that's a nice name. I like
and,
that.
And the over a hit per inning, 21 homers already in 150 innings in a nice park. I think you summed it up perfectly. I don't want to be holding the bag when the shit explodes. So I'm not in on him.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Iwakuma moving forward?
bravo to the random Jeff Supon shout out. I don't know where you came up with that, Matt, but bravo to
hey,
you.
He's very, you know what I mean, very fourth, fifth starter-ish.
So, I hope Jeff Supon's not listening to this episode like, hey.
Well, yeah, I could have went and used like a Jeff Weaver or somebody else like that too, so some old shitty Cardinal starter, but I picked Supon, so...
Well, last season with Iwakuma, he was obviously injured in the first half. So, you know, the second half is where he kind of upped his game a bit. And, you know, if you compare the second half from last season to what he's doing so far this year in the second half, you know, everything's just a tick down, like you guys have already kind of mentioned here. His velocity is a tick down. He's not giving up a ton of home runs, which is nice to see, but the strikeout rate is also ticking down just a little bit. The ground ball rate is ticking down a bunch, which means that he's giving up a ton more fly balls. He's getting lucky. His left on base or strand rate is up over 80% so far in the second half. He has a 2.34 ERA so far in the second half, and his xFIP or expected ERA is almost 4. You know, he was a top 40 starter in drafts going into this season. I can tell you comfortably, I will not be taking him amongst them. I think he's, you know, a top, you know, 55 starter next year. And that's not including, you know, some of the young starters that will be coming up. I'm definitely taking guys like Dylan Bundy ahead of him. Michael Fulmer just came onto the scene this year. You definitely have to take him above him. Danny Duffy, you know, there's a ton of arms that have made their way, you know, into the scene that you want to take above Iwakuma just based on upside alone. Not to knock him, because I don't think he's a terrible starter, and I've always kind of had his back, but, you know, he's hitting 35. You're seeing a drop in velocity. You're seeing a little bit more, you know, fly ball tendency to him. I just think that, you know, over the course of the next 6 to 8, 9 months, you're going to see, you know, him become more of a middling guy as opposed to a above average person.
Now, the rise in his, or the drop in his ground ball rate, do you think it's going to impact him as negatively as some other pitchers, that he is in a more friendly ballpark where those home runs aren't, like, for example, if he was in like Cincinnati, I'm very concerned about the fly ball.
Well, he pitches in Angel Stadium too, which is a nice park, and then Oakland as well. So it might not affect him as bad.
And I also think that the ground ball rate is a correlation of him changing himself as a pitcher. And he seems to be a guy who can adjust to what his body's kind of throwing out there. So maybe he's trying to get a few more fly balls and just pitch to the stadium.
I don't mind that either. Like, if he becomes more of a fly ball guy because he wants to, you know, pitch to the tendencies of whatever stadium, look, you know, fly ball pitchers are just as effective at times as ground ball pitchers. It's just, you know, it correlates better with strikeout rate and what we're looking for in fantasy when somebody is a ground ball guy.
Let's move on and talk about Billy Hamilton, who has been pretty much on fire recently and just stealing a cup or a bunch of bags. Let's see, he's got 3, 6, 10, 12, 13, 14, 15, 15 stolen bases, I believe, in his last 10 games or so. He's hitting for a decent average. Is this the Billy Hamilton we've all been waiting for, or is this kind of just a hot streak, Mike?
Man, I would love to say that I was right about Billy Hamilton, because I've been pretty much the only guy that's been by his side forever.
How dare you say that?
Well, I was the only guy that drafted him literally everywhere almost. You know, at the end of the day, he just got injured again tonight. He had a hand injury on Saturday, and then he left tonight with a knee problem. This is also coming with a, you know, borderline concussion he had earlier this season. He's such a frail guy that you do worry about that. But, you know, he was being taken in the top 100 going into drafts this year. You know, if you looked at his first half alone, people were probably very much not in. You know, I mean, he did have 20 stolen bases, but batting 240 is not something that, you know, people were, you know, hoping for. I think that that's a little bit better than I thought he might, you know, go with. But overall, man, he's done everything that I thought he could do. He's going to steal over 50 bases. I think you can expect that going into next year. As far as his hitting, you know, his hit tool is concerned, it's still questionable for me. You know, I don't necessarily think he's a 260 hitter, which is what he's done this year. I still think he's more of a 240, 250 guy. But regardless, if he's able to hit 240, 250, and hopefully the Reds lineup gets a little bit better and he stays in the leadoff spot, you could see him be a top, you know, 30, you know, fantasy asset for years to come, just because the, you know, stolen bases around the league have been down, and a guy that steals 50 plus bases, you know, normally is going to be a guy that's going to be insanely valuable. So I'm still in on Hamilton. The hit tool may come later on in his career, but for now you can rely on him for stolen bases.
Paul, what are your thoughts on Billy Hamilton going into next year?
If I'm giving like options with him, I'm going to wait a little bit more for a Jankowski just because I'm still concerned with the hit tool. I think he could have a D. Gordon kind of bust out. He's still young enough that maybe he kind of figures it out and then the steals are going to come like nobody's business. But the numbers aren't that encouraging on the hit side. The defense is definitely solid enough to keep him out there for part of the year. But if I had a choice, I'm banking on Jankowski because I like his walk rate more, and I like his defense is really excellent out there. So I see more playing time with him. So I'm definitely concerned with, you know, as you were saying, like the hit rate is just, I don't think he's a sustainable 260. If he walked, I'd be all over it. But I'm not seeing that patience from him that you'd really hope from a guy like him with his style of play.
The only thing I'm going to say about Jankowski in that argument is San Diego just has a ton of guys that I think are coming up next year. And so I worry that his playing time will be limited after May or June next year because they've got so many outfielders in the high minors that at some point they're going to move him out of the starting lineup for a Manny Margot, a Hunter Renfroe, guys like that. I was high on Billy Hamilton. I wasn't as high as Mike was. But I mean, as long as this knee problem that has happened on Monday night isn't a big deal, I mean, I think we could potentially see him end the season with over 70 steals, which is insane, especially in today's game where stolen bases are a little bit more of a premium than power guys. So I really like Billy Hamilton. Will he hit 260? Rest of the way or into next season? Probably not. But I don't necessarily see it dropping a huge amount. I know his BABIP is high, but we talk a lot about that, you know, guys of his speed and of his kind of slap hitting ability tend to have a higher BABIP because they can outrun a lot of ground balls, a lot of weakly hit balls. So Billy Hamilton is a guy that I still like. The only thing I worry about is after this season, if his value jumps up huge. I mean, he's a top 20 hitter on the ESPN player rater. So you got to think that there are going to be people who are going to start taking him in the top 40 overall, which may be a little bit too rich for my blood, considering what Mike said about his frailty and injury history. And then his ability to completely fall off the map and not be able to hit at all. Matt, what are your thoughts on Billy Hamilton?
I think you guys pretty much covered it. The thing I like is he's continuing to hit the ball on the ground a lot more, and I think obviously with his skill set, he's always going to be a high BABIP guy. But even with the high BABIP, he's only at 260. So like you guys said, I mean, I'd bet out in 245, 250 range for next year maybe, and I still think he can steal 70, 80 bags even with that skill set if he can stay healthy because the defense will keep him on the field. I was out on Hamilton. I was probably wrong on him, but I will never own him only because I'm not going to take him that high. And I tend to do kind of rely on what Paul said. You can get a guy like Jankowski a little bit later. There's always some of those guys that pop up. So I'll never own Hamilton, but I mean, I guess it's nice to see him showing what the player he can be by realizing, hey, I need to hit the ball on the ground because I have no power.
And go ahead,
Paul.
I was just going to say something about the injury tonight too. Just a little more info. It wasn't a tweak or anything. He ran into a wall, actually.
Ugh. Awesome. Well, everybody knows how I feel about walls. Seriously, you're playing on the Cincinnati Reds. This team is going absolutely nowhere. Do not run into fucking walls, people. Like, how difficult is this? Like, you know, your season is going nowhere. Just stay healthy.
Jog for that ball. Don't sprint.
If you're not like in a playoff like race kind of game or in the playoffs, I never want to see people crashing into the walls. It's just not worth it.
But the highlights are so cool, man.
Yeah.
Awesome.
He's going to have a ton more highlights on the DL if he does stuff like this on a continuous basis. This was one of the reasons why Harper took so long to break out. You know, he kept running into fucking walls.
Who's Bryce Harper? Is he a first round pick?
Yeah.
And not in my book. we'll talk about Harper when we get Sporer back on the program because he beat me up pretty good on Harper in the preseason.
He did.
Him and Patrick Corbin. How you like me now, Sporer?
Oh man.
Call out shots. Somebody's probably not even listening.
I figure since Paul Gustav is on the podcast that this will get back to him. So let's talk about Adam Ottavino, the newly anointed closer of the Colorado Rockies. Paul, I know you cover a lot of the bullpen report over at Rotographs. What are your thoughts on Ottavino as a closer in Colorado?
Well, I think you just used two key words. Closer Colorado scares the shit out of me. I don't care how good of a pitcher you are. Because even Estevez, I think, will be a very good relief pitcher. The guy, Carlos Estevez, who lost the role before this. I'm just always scared of closers in Colorado. They're type of guys that I – like, if I'm in a league where holds are available, I'll stream my Colorado guys where they're on the road. But – It's very hard to sustain success there. Even though Ottavino is the type of guy that, with his numbers, he could keep it up. It's just when is the other shoe going to drop by pitching in Colorado? Because Jake McGee was a guy I predicted to get 40 saves if he stayed healthy. He was getting the saves, but his numbers have not been close to what they used to be. So, given a more sample size with Ottavino, I'm definitely a little concerned just because pitchers in Colorado just scare the shit out of me all the time.
Matt, you've been on the record that pitchers don't scare you as much in Colorado. What are your thoughts on Ottavino?
Yeah, he's been the best pitcher in that bullpen for a while now, when he's been healthy, obviously. Glad to see the velocity's back this year. One thing that scares me with him especially is he's so slider-heavy in that ballpark. Slider's a volatile pitch. Little bit up, you're in trouble, especially in that place. I'm glad to see him. I mean, former Cardinal first round draft pick, so he's got the pedigree. I'm glad to see him doing well. I just can't get all that excited about him. I like Ottavino's stuff, I do, but it comes down to the Coors Field for him and throwing so many off speed pitches. I can't trust him.
Mike, do you trust Ottavino?
I do. Career 3.28 ERA at home in Coors Field, 4.20 on the road. Matt mentioned his velocity ticking back up. It has this last month. He has brought that velocity back up to about 94. Last year, he was averaging 96 in his small sample before he got Tommy John. He is slider heavy, and that always is a concern in Coors Field. But in terms of relief pitchers, I think that he will be one of the guys that we get at a value going into next year because, first off, Edwin Diaz is probably going to be like the top closer taken because everybody and their mom loves him to death.
If he's a closer,
he doesn't, convert to a starting pitcher. But at least right now, I think Ottavino for me is comfortably a top 15 closer with the upside certainly to be better than that. For right now, if you ended up getting him or, stashing him while Estevez was the closer, then, bravo. I think that Ottavino will have the role the rest of the way. He's top 15 in xFIP so far in the second half amongst relievers, has almost an 11 strikeout per nine, doing very good at keeping the walk rate down. There's really nothing here telling me that he's going to lose the role at anytime soon. So I think he's a top 15 guy for the rest of the way this year and going into next year.
Wow, that's a pretty ballsy statement, a top 15 guy rest of the way this year and going into next year. I've been impressed so far by what I've seen of him, especially in terms of he's not really walking anybody. I think he only has 3 walks so far since returning in no games with multi-walks. And one of the things we always kind of worry about with guys coming back from Tommy John is how quickly will the control kind of return. And so far, he looks like a guy who, at least by the numbers, it isn't out of control. The velocity's back. The control seems to be in place. So he's a guy that I like, but at the same time, the pitching in Colorado, not just because it's a shitty stadium to pitch in, which it is. I know Matt has talked about on numerous occasions that there is a science to pitching in Coors, but at the same time, how many wins is his team going to have rest of the way that he's going to get a save opportunity for? They're not bad, but they're not great either.
I love the offense.
But they're going to win a ton of games by 4 or more runs. How many save opportunities is he going to get? And then, versus the blow-up potential that is there because it is Colorado. You've got to weigh that risk-reward. If you need saves and he's out on the market, go and get him because you know, saves are a category in, you know, especially in Roto. You need to have them in order to compete for the, you know, in the majority, unless you've been punting saves. But at the same time, if you are, you know, in a precarious situation with your ERA and WHIP, it may not be worth it. It may be more worth it to pick him up and try to move him at the deadline. Be like, hey, look, he's the closer now. Remember all the great things we saw with him before the Tommy John surgery. He's back. And see if you can move him for a guy who's, you know, maybe not as talented, but in a better overall situation.
Go ahead.
I didn't mean to. I'm just wondering, are you taking him over Jake Barrett right now?
Yeah. Not close.
Oh, yeah. Definitely out of, you know.
Yeah, not close.
Yeah, I think I would, but I think it's a lot closer than Mike and Matt are making it sound.
No, it's not.
Dude, the situation, just because of the situation, there's nobody threatening Barrett. Like, nobody's going to really threaten him hardcore for his job. Where I think Ottavino, he slips up. They could still, they like Estevez a lot over there also. They moved him into that closer role pretty easily after the McGee injury with guys like Boone Logan, who was pitching well. I could see stability-wise, I might, next year I agree Ottavino's a better pick, but for this year, I don't see anyone threatening Barrett for those saves.
Yeah,
I completely agree with you.
Well, I think somebody will either get signed or, you know, I'm not counting on Barrett because skills wise I'm not impressed. But you know, I want to bring up.
He's saying for the rest of this year.
Yeah, for the rest of this year, I think that, you know, there's a case to be made that Barrett might have a more secure, you know, hold on the closer's role. But at the end of the day, I believe in Ottavino's skills. I think that there's, even if he does have one blow-up outing and they throw Estevez in there for an outing or something, they're going to let Ottavino come right back out there. Colorado really is almost out of it anyways, so I think they're going to continue to have Ottavino be the guy. I did want to bring up with Estevez, you know, there's this always this thing about, you know, bad teams not, you know, getting saves. If we took Estevez 2 months of, or not even 2 months of having the closer role, he would have, you know, amounted to about 30 saves this season if he had a full year. So I don't think that, you know, just because Colorado isn't a great place to pitch and they don't have the best team in the world doesn't mean that you can't get a guy next year in Ottavino that can get 30 plus saves and have really good ratios.
Let me add something real quick in Ottavino. Colorado invested in him. They signed a 3-year extension in December. So, I mean, that was with him coming off the Tommy John and everything. So I think, I mean, there's no reason for them not to go to him as a closer. They're going to stick with him long term. He came back and proved he was healthy, put up good velocity numbers. The numbers are there. I think he's entrenched in their closer position for another 2-3 years unless he gets hurt again. So,
And while I'm not necessarily going to disagree with that point, remember that was the same argument everybody had for Ken Giles coming into the season.
Well, yeah. That's actually not – I actually had a different argument, and it turned out to be somewhat correct. I kind of speculated they might not go to Giles only because they didn't want to pay him because it's arbitration.
Well, but I mean, what I'm saying, like, they paid a price. That was every – not yours and definitely not mine because me and Mike had a long argument about this in the preseason. But I don't think necessarily that teams need or want to have their best starting pitcher in as the closer. Sometimes it is a smarter decision – and while
it absolutely is.
So I don't think it's a guarantee necessarily, you know, because Colorado has really started to kind of change a little bit of the way they do things and be a little bit smarter organization. So I wouldn't say it's 100% guarantee, but I would say that it probably is a higher likelihood because of the contract.
I agree.
Let's go ahead and talk about Neil Walker. And since we've got a Mets fan on the podcast, Paul, what are your thoughts on Neil Walker so far this year?
He's been kind of hot and cold this year. He started off super hot, got really cold. He's hot again. He's basically, I think at the end of the year, we're pretty much going to see the normal numbers from Neil Walker, which is a guy who's going to bat around 300. The power is definitely more than we've seen since his 14 season. He's batting in a really good spot in their lineup and a really hurt lineup, so take that for what it's worth. And for second baseman, He's obviously not my top – I don't have him in my top five for second baseman, but the power has been really good, and they made an adjustment on the right side with him where he was doing a foot tap, and they fixed that. So he's hit more home runs from the right side than he's ever hit in his whole career. I think he has like 7 or 8 so far. So he's not a guy that you have to necessarily platoon anymore, which was kind of a concern coming into the season. What are they going to do when he faces a lefty? So the thing that's getting overshadowed with Neil Walker, at least in New York, is Daniel Murphy's become Babe Ruth all of a sudden, and no one knows where the fuck that came from. So that's kind of hurting his value. But he's a guy that is a Met fan. We're going to have to consider offering him that $16 million or whatever the qualifying offer is next year, or offer him a contract that I don't know if we were sure that was going to happen coming into the season.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Neil Walker going into this, or from what he's done this year and then going into next year?
I believe he's second among second basemen in baseball in home runs behind the second coming of Jesus Christ and Daniel Murphy. But, I mean, you got to like the power from the second base option. I mean, going forward, he's got to be a top six or seven option at the position for me. I just lower him a little bit because I'm not a really big Neil Walker fan long term. I don't like the batting average versus lefties is kind of a sketchy thing. I mean, he kind of last year he was terrible. Pittsburgh was even kind of moving stuff around, and Harrison was playing a little bit of second with Gung at third when Walker might have, was kind of sitting toward the end of the year against lefties. But yeah, the doubles have disappeared and turned into home runs. He's only got eight doubles, which is really kind of weird. But they turned into homers, and he's hitting a nice average of 275 right now. He walks a decent clip. He's just kind of meh, kind of a little boring. Nothing to get excited about, but he's producing, so can't knock it.
I think you forgot about a couple guys in terms of second baseman with Pop, because Dozier and Cano both have, I believe, 26 home runs.
Enough. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
But still,
maybe I mean, I'm talking about National League. Maybe it's National League.
Yeah, National League, I believe he is second. And, I mean, what he's done is fairly impressive. I mean, he's hitting 315 against lefties with seven home runs. So, like Paul was saying, like the splits aren't as drastic as we kind of become accustomed to with Neil Walker. You know, it'll be interesting to see if he – I'm sure he'll get the qualifying offer, but – I doubt he'll take the qualifying offer. He's 30 years old. He's probably looking for, you know, a 3 to 4 year deal. And he deserves it because he's unless he gets injured at some point or goes extremely cold for the next six weeks or so, he's going to hit the most amount of home runs he's ever had in a season, which was 23 back in 2014. I like Neil Walker. I think he ride the hot streak. And I think he's a little bit underrated. I think he's a guy that at the trade deadline, If you need a little bit of power and pop from your second baseman because you've been rostering maybe like a Starlin Castro or something like that, I don't think he costs a whole lot. He's a guy I'd go out and get for the stretch run. Mike, what are your thoughts on Neil Walker?
You know, it's kind of crazy. You guys have all hit on great points with Walker, so there's not much to really add there. You know, you guys mentioned the fact that he's done so much better against lefties, the best he's done in his career. Hopefully that's something that continues with him. You know, the rest of the way, I think he is a safe option to continue to roll out there at second base. He was taken this year, you know, outside the top 230 picks. So you've already, you know, been given the value, you know, based on where you took him in drafts. So bravo, you already have, you know, what you needed from him and more. Going into next year, that's kind of more my concern. I think that there's a chance that even despite, you know, his first, you know, couple months between April, you know, and May, he ended up hitting, you know, 13 home runs then. And then since, you know, since April and May, he's been kind of mediocre. He's, you know, had it bad about 270, but, you know, only eight home runs since then and about 244 plate appearances. There's a chance that he could end up going in about the same draft slot next season, even though he had such a eruption at the beginning of the year, which I find kind of interesting in that sense. There's a ton of second base depth. You know, you have, you know, even your lower tier guys like Dustin Pedroia, Starlin Castro, Josh Harrison, Logan Forsythe, you know, all of those. Yeah, you want to talk about Scope. Yeah, Scope's going to be a top eight option at least, you know, going into drafts next year. And then, you know, your higher tier guys, Jose Altuve, Robinson Cano, Jason Kipnis, Ian Kinsler, Daniel Murphy, you know, Rougned Odor, Devin Travis. Matt Carpenter. I mean, there's so many second base options that chances are that, you know, I think Walker will end up being, and I didn't even mention D. Gordon, you know, Neil Walker will end up being, you know, probably taken later on, you know, like he was this year. And he'll probably, you know, add, you know, some good value to your team. You know, I think that he is a safe option to hit at least 15 plus home runs and, you know, be a decent batting average guy, probably continue to sit in the middle of a lineup, regardless of whether it's the Mets or somebody else. So, you know, I believe in Neil Walker. I don't think he's as good as a lot of these top tier options at the position, but I think he's steady, and that's all you can ask for, especially in deeper leagues.
I think 2016, for me at least, will be like, I'm going to remember it as the year in which positional value flipped around on its head. Because we went like into the year where we're like, ooh, you know, second base and shortstop, not super deep. Though, I mean, I think some of us thought it was a little bit deeper than maybe others did. To like first base being like the shallow position, at least on the diamond. So it'll be interesting to see how the depth at positions changes everybody's value going into next year.
I think a guy like Walker is nice to pair with, like finding maybe pairing him in your draft with a high stolen base guy and getting him later. He's a nice little complement to a high stolen base, low home run guy. So you don't want to bank on saying I'm getting Neil Walker in this round of my draft, but waiting on him and seeing, as Mike was saying, he wasn't drafted in a lot of leagues. Now you make him a little bit of a pair, kind of like I do with Chris Carter a lot at first base. If I get a high stolen base, low home run guy at short, boom, I'm getting Chris Carter to make up for that power then, because I know he's going to give me a lot of it.
Yeah, and I think it'll be really interesting because, yeah, I think that's a great idea. Like maybe you pair him with a Gene Segura, you know, and you get the speed there and the runs, and then you get the extra pop from Walker. I think that's a great idea to pair him with another middle infielder or even just another player that gets kind of the speed, because I'm just looking at kind of the ESPN player rater at second base, and I mean, it's going to be hard for me to get Neil Walker in my top 15 second baseman, because right now he's 15th on the ESPN player rater, and he's got guys like Matt Carpenter and Addison Russell and Devon Travis behind him. You know, a number of guys, you know, Javier Baez, who I love, who has a multi-positional eligibility. I mean, there's a lot of guys kind of behind him that, you know, you could argue should be ahead of him. And there's not a ton of guys ahead of him that you should argue should be behind him.
I'm going to throw another name out there as a complete wild card. What about Johan Moncada?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on – he probably won't come in with second base eligibility, though.
That's where he's playing in the minors. I mean, he's going to have to
I
have
thought
that
he started out. Playing third.
He did, but he's been – like the other day was his like first career pro game at third base for the Red Sox. So he's been playing second base.
Well, it depends on if he comes up, because if he comes up, he's not coming up to play second unless Pedroia gets hurt.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that.
And then he'll have games at third, and that's where his position eligibility would be. But I mean, that's an interesting name. You know how I feel about drafting rookies and drafting guys not in the majors yet. So Moncada won't be on any of my teams probably next year. And I'm sure there's a chance I will, but I'm not willing to bank on it. Let's go ahead and move over and talk about a guy that talked about a number of guys today that I kind of either did or didn't believe in very strongly. Kyle Hendricks was a guy that I completely ignored on draft day. I never saw this coming. He's got a 2.19 ERA this season in pitching for the Cubs. Matt, you're a Cubs homer.
Yeah, sure.
What are your thoughts on Kyle Hendricks?
Well, I know Mike was high on him this year, and so was I coming into the year, but I don't think – I mean, I didn't think this was in the bag.
This has got to be a fluke, right?
Yes, I think to a certain extent. I think his ERA is more likely to hover around the 3.1, 3-ish area, not 2.1, because, I mean, a couple days when Kershaw loses his eligibility, Hendricks is going to become the major league ERA leader, which is kind of strange because you would never think that. But he has 2+ pitches in the bag with the fastball due to the command. I mean, it's only low 90s, but the dude can put it on a dime. And the changeup, which sets up perfectly off the fastball, it just looks like exactly like the fastball, and it just completely the vertical drop on it at the end is ridiculous. He was throwing it to right handers, throws it to righties with equal success as he does to lefties. It's an insane pitch. He complements it with another little off speed pitch, which isn't great, but I mean, when it's league average, and when you have 2+ pitches with a league average pitch, I mean that's going to play. But not to get too technical or anything like here, but the Cubs defense behind him is helped him a great deal with an infield of Bryant, Russell, and Baez. When Baez plays second, there's probably not one better with Rizzo at first defensively in the league. So he gets a lot of ground balls, so that helps. They shift a ton,
which helps because they're always, you know, the scouting data is as much as I hate to say it, it's pretty good. I mean, the BABIP is 258, but that's exactly why. The only thing he doesn't do for you that you like is throw hard, but I mean, there's no fantasy category for throwing hard. So, I mean, you got to like what you see here. I'm buying, but it's obviously not going to be like this, but I'm not selling them either because I think, you know, what's his FIP right now? It's a 3.44. I think that's probably about what you can expect at very worst next year. I'd bet around 3.0 ERA, but hey, you know, let's see. You got to take what you can get. And if you invested in Hendricks, you're getting more than what you paid for, and you have to be ecstatic.
Paul, what are your thoughts on Hendricks kind of rest of the season and then going into next year?
I agree with the fact that I'm not necessarily buying because I think the value is too high. But if I have them, I'm not selling them either unless I get a really great value for them. Because I'm definitely concerned with the two numbers that stick out is that FIP, the 3.38, which even if he goes back to that, I'm still very happy with it. It's just I'm not paying for a 2.19 ERA at this point. And his left on base is a little bit higher than I would like. It's around 80, which is higher than his career. But if there is a systematic change within the Cubs in terms of playing better defense, better shifts, it's a very believable change that I don't think is necessarily magic. He's young enough that if he really is commanding that changeup more, this could be a very sustainable change. But to be honest, I don't watch him enough. I don't have the visual scouting. I'm going based off of numbers. So there are some indicators like the BABIP's lower than usual and the high left on base. But there does seem to be an explanation for why that's happening. So it's not total smoke and mirrors where I'm like, you know what, I'm immediately selling. But I'm also cautious if I'm going to buy for him at this point also.
Mike, is this a fluke or not?
I mean, first off, you want to talk about people that were high on him. I was beating that drum all prior to the season starting. I'm ecstatic that he did this or is doing this. I mean, he could stop right now and be, you know, and give me, you know, pretty much all the value that I've ever wanted from him. No, I don't think it's a fluke. You know, he's definitely not a top eight starter, which is what the ESPN player rater currently has him at. You know, he's stellar at home. He has a 1.31 ERA at home. You know, he's not the best strikeout guy in the world because of the fact that he doesn't have strong velocity, you know, not the best pitching, or not the best, you know, stuff in the world either. But, in general, I think he is a, you know, going into next year, he's going to be valued too high. I agree with that. You know, he's probably going to be amongst the top 25 starters or so. And I don't, you know, really want to fool with that. I'm not going to pay that price. But, you know, for the rest of the way, if you have him, there's no reason to sell him. He's going to be a guy that continues to be at least a top 20, 25 guy. Like, he will be valued next year. And, you know, you bought him for such a, you know, a price that was so much lower than that. So there's no reason to sell him. So I think that this is a bit fluky. But, you know, going into next year, you know, you probably will have to kind of fade him a bit because he's going to be valued too high.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see his next start. His next start's in Coors Field, so I want to see how that goes.
Probably not great.
You just want to see the Cubs lose.
He's keeping the ball down. It'll be interesting. So
Mets making a comeback, by the way. Go, Paul.
Yeah, I just saw Jose Reyes, the guy who treats his women right. and I think totally sarcastic about that. I realize that I'm on radio and no one really knows me. I was being totally sarcastic about that. But he did just have a big hit, and now Granderson's coming up, so we'll see what happens.
That drop is totally going up at the front of the intro music.
I've been listening to the radio around here, man. I guess the Cubs played some sketchy song after Chapman pitched or something last night.
Yeah, I saw a headline for that, but I don't know what they played.
They played something. The song's called, like, Beat My Bitch Up or something.
Oh, my gosh. That's insane.
And they played that right after Chapman got off the mound, and I guess they fired the DJ today.
So. Yeah, man. That's
just stick with the organ. Just stick with the organ.
So they're making a big shit over it in sports radio today. It's been a hell of a day. Mm. The guy that commits the crime doesn't get fired, but the guy that makes fun of him gets fired. It's kind of weird. But hey, the radio DJ doesn't throw 105, so I guess that's why he got fired.
Yeah, that's true. let's talk about Keon Broxton, who is a guy I was super high on coming into the year as a cheap NL-only sleeper, struggled in his original kind of call-up to the big leagues, got sent down, but has been hot as of late, has 14 stolen bases so far this season. Mike, what are your thoughts on Keon Broxton?
I mean, he's an NL-only play. You know, for the long term, I really don't know where he slots in here. I mean, I know Lewis Brinson just went on the DL, and, you know, chances were we weren't going to see him this year. So I'm not, you know, I'm not really worried about his role for the rest of 2016. So, I mean, in an NL-only league, I'm completely okay with trotting him out there. He doesn't play necessarily every day, but he's been somewhat regular player here these last couple of weeks since he's been called up. So I'm okay, you know, rolling him out there for the rest of the season. In terms of long-term outlook, I don't know where he's going to really slot in. You know, I think, you know, Braun has the chance of, you know, not staying healthy, which is, you know, pretty obvious considering his age. Kirk Neuenheis is somebody that can play, but he's more of a platoon guy. So, I mean, maybe he can, you know, kind of go and, you know, get some regular at-bats going into next year. But, you know, for the rest of this season, I think he's certainly intriguing. You need stolen bases. And even in deeper mixed formats, I think he's somebody that's valuable in that aspect of things. But he's just not – he's not somebody that's going to hit for a ton of power, even though, you know, he's hit three bombs this year, you know, only in 113 at-bats. I don't really consider him a guy that would you know, accrue double-digit home runs if he had a full season. But I do think he is a 20 stolen base guy if he had a full season of at-bats. So that's, I think, pretty valuable the rest of the way.
Yeah, I was going to say Braun's guy that could potentially get moved, but I just went and clicked on what's left on Ryan Braun's contract.
Yeah,
that's not happening.
He's been hitting the crap out of the ball.
Yeah, he's had two home runs the other day. I mean, Braun's been solid, you know.
Braun's been fantastic this year.
I traded what's left of Yasiel Puig's fantasy value for Braun.
Yeah, we know.
That was a really nice deal for me.
Brosnan, though, is a guy I really liked. Neuenheis is... What, he's got to be like 40, 41 years old. So, I mean, I
40,
I,
41?
He's not 41. Isn't Neuenheis?
Neuenheis is 29, bro.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Where you're like, at. I don't know. I don't know where I was.
Justin,
I was
you're 44 or 45.
Yeah. How fucking dare you?
Paul, Neuenheis was on the Mets last year. You have to be taking, you know, some time. You've got to be mad about that statement, right?
Oh. I'm not mad. I'm just hoping he doesn't turn into Justin Turner Part 2. If he turns into Justin Turner Part 2, then yeah, they might have to play Smack My Bitch Up as my walk-up song wherever I go.
Imagine that, though. Like, they got rid of Neuenheis and then Daniel Murphy and Justin Turner all in the matter for the last few years.
They don't like white guys, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And Neuenheis, the weird thing about Neuenheis was, and you heard this on every Mets broadcast, was he used to be a running back in Colorado, so... If you want to bring some nuggets of truth to people, let them know that you know that Neuenheis used to be a running back, which means absolutely jack shit on an NFL team. But let us know this all the time.
It's a big running back.
Don't say 6'3"? That to Jeff Samardzija.
6'3 is a big running back, no?
I'm having a whole lot of trouble like spelling Neuenheis right now.
N-I-E-U-W-E-N-H-U-I-S.
Well, you've got Neuenheis. You've obviously got his page up. How old is he?
29, bro.
Holy shit, why did I think he was 40? I don't know. But Creon Braun, Neuenheis isn't any good, so...
He's not bad.
Stop it.
He's a good defensive... He's a fourth, fifth outfielder.
I tell you what, if I needed power, I would rather take him in and only than Broxton.
Rest of the season, board bet. Creon Braxton or Neuenheis?
I'm on Broxton's side, baby.
I'll take Broxton.
I'm taking Broxton because of the stolen bases. But I'm just saying, if you needed power, Neuenheis has more power, for sure.
Ugh, gross. Broxton's a dude that I do like, and I think he maybe could become more useful than just NL only because of the speed component. I think he's a guy that could easily steal another 10 bases this season. You know, I mean, he's got what, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 or 7 stolen base or 6 stolen bases in the last 8 games. So I mean, he's a guy who can steal. And if you're struggling in stolen bases in a 15-team mixed, he's a guy that is probably still available on your waiver wire. He's walking at a 15% clip right now. I know the average sucks, but if you're playing an OBP league, that doesn't matter. I think this is a guy that is a tad bit underrated that Milwaukee got for nothing. So I think they want to see what they have in him. If he is going to be a part of the future in Milwaukee. So he's a guy that I think, especially rested this season, will get plenty of run. Paul, what are your thoughts on Broxton?
So my question for you guys is, Are you concerned about the K rate?
The 44%?
Absolutely. That's been an issue with him since he's been in prospect.
No,
so
but listen to this, though. Since he's come back up on the 26th of July, he only has a 28% strikeout rate, but he has almost a 17% walk rate, which definitely feeds into the steals. He's almost like Travis Jankowski. You know, not like, I mean, the strikeout rate is obviously worse, but, you know, he's a stolen base threat. He walks a ton. You know, like that's, you know, something that can definitely be useful in deeper, you know, leagues and NL only, though.
He's kind of like the Nolan Ryan of hitters then, right? Where he just doesn't want to put the ball in play, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, and I agree in an OBP league, I'm jumping all over him. Batting in a BA league, I'm a little – yeah. I'm definitely a little hesitant. But if you need stolen bases, man, you can't be picky for that stuff. If they're
nope, around, not at all.
Yeah, especially in your deeper formats. If he's there, I'm totally fine grabbing him. I just picked him up in a 15-man industry league because he was sitting on the wire, and I can't remember who I just lost. But, oh, Hanley. Hanley went on paternity leave. So, you know, he's a nice little addition, I think, in your deeper formats. Did everybody talk on Broxton? Matt, did you get a chance to talk on Broxton?
I just want to add, I mean, through the minors, he was a third-round pick by Arizona, got traded to Pittsburgh, traded to the Brewers. That's always been the MO for him, man. It's speed. He strikes out too much, doesn't make enough contact at all. We touched on the 56% contact rate, 383 BABIP, and that's still only hitting 230. So, I mean, it is what it is. Don't expect too much. But, and Mike said it, stole my thunder there. I said he's a nice Travis Jankowski type player. Doesn't strike out a lot. Get you your 15, 20 steals at the end of your bench. And next year with regular playing time, if he gets regular playing time with Milwaukee, which he probably won't because they got guys like Brinson and stuff coming up. But, I mean, he's an outside chance at 30, 35 steals with the playing time. But, I don't know. The power-speed combo is a little bit interesting, but the strikes out. He strikes out a little bit too much to nullify that. And he's a good DFS play against lefties if you need to get desperate and cheap. So try that.
Yeah, I mean, the Brewers do have quite a bit in their farm system, especially after some of the moves they've made recently. You know, they got Brett Phillips in AA and Brinson in AAA. So, he could easily get pushed out at some point next season. So this is probably a better guy to just kind of key on in your deeper formats for this year.
Domingo Santana is coming back pretty soon too, so he might push him out there too. So who knows?
Yeah, it's plausible. But I mean, it's not like Santana was great either, though. So
no, he's got the skills. It's tantalizing all the power and
yeah. But I mean, you know, Broxton can play center, and I mean, can Santana really play a decent center?
They had him playing center earlier this year. I don't think he can. But I mean, who's playing right for them right now? Well, they got Braun in right. Who's in left?
They got Hernan Perez because they had to move him off.
Yeah,
the shortstop.
That's right. So he's not going to get benched. He's producing too much. So I mean, yeah, if they could move, it could be interesting. So there's no guarantee for playing time for him here on out.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about Drew Smyly. And when we bring up Rays that have been awful most of the year, we throw it to Mike.
Who's also been awful most of the year.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. like, honestly, I'm just kind of throwing my hands up, to be honest. Like, I love Smyly. I, you know, still think that there's a ton of hope for him. He has had such a problem with home runs this year that I'm beginning to get really worried. I've already was worried about the shoulder. You know, we've seen his swing strike rate, you know, kind of fluctuate as the season has gone on, which means that, you know, he's, you know, getting batters to whiff at times. And then at other times his stuff just isn't there. You know, ultimately, this year has been somewhat of a train wreck, to be honest with you. He has kind of mended things these last, you know, few starts overall. You know, he had a 10 strikeout game against Kansas City, which is nice to see. You know, so he's strung together some nice starts, but that still doesn't take away a horrible July and June, you know, and at the end of the day, don't worry about the shoulder. So, you know, going into drafts next year, I would put him probably amongst a top 50 starter-ish, and that's hoping, you know, that he, you know, maintains health. But he's going to go way higher than that. He was the 46th starter off the board this year. You know, somehow, some way, I think he actually will end up being a little bit higher going into next year. Like,
no,
top 41,
come on.
42. I really do, because, I mean, some of the starters that were drafted this year are going to be plummeting. Like, Jordan Zimmerman, nobody's taking him in the top 40.
Yeah, but there's guys who are... There's guys who have emerged out of nowhere, like you mentioned, Duffy and Fulmer. And I mean, yeah, I think he goes outside of the top 50. I mean, this is a guy who's sporting over a 5 ERA.
Yeah, and but in the second half, it's been, you know, 3-6. You know, so I mean, he's gotten things better.
The industry guys will definitely swing the value. But I mean, I think a lot of people will always be scared of the homer problems. I mean, the thing I like to see is that, you know, he's got four consecutive quality starts. He pitches in a decent ballpark. I mean, I think he's gotten pretty unlucky in the home run department. I think next year he's going to come at a bargain, and I think he's a guy you should buy in on.
Yeah, I'm still worried about the shoulder and the fact that he hasn't been, you know, healthy pretty much his whole career, you know, and maybe I'm just being a little too hard on him, but, you know, the stuff is inconsistent. I mean, overall, his changeup, his curve and fastball are all inconsistent. He always has to use placement and command, you know, to his advantage to have really good games. And at times he looks legit this year, you know, at times this year, but then at other times it looks like he has no idea where anything's going. And a lot of times, you know, either shoulder or elbow, you know, is shown, you know, with a control problem. That means that you have some type of problem there. So, I mean, the velocity's been okay, which means I think that the elbow is okay, but the shoulder still with the command issues is where I kind of still worry.
Yeah, I mean, his FIP and XFIP are both at 429, markedly lower than his ERA. He's got just an inflated BABIP and a much lower left on base percentage than kind of his career norms. So, I mean, I think this is a guy that is going to, I'm not going to say he's going to be a stud next year, but I think he could be a top 50 starter, and I don't think you're going to have to pay top 50 starting prices next year. Paul, what are your thoughts on Smiley going into next year?
I agree with you, Justin, and I also like these Rays pitchers going forward, because I think this home run thing kind of caught them off guard, and I think they're young enough, and I think they're intelligent enough to kind of figure it out. And as I say this, Smiley gave up a home run today.
Alexi Ramirez. Yeah, that's who he's giving it up to, people. Alexi Ramirez.
But he also had 7 innings of, and that was the only hit he gave up. He gave up 2 walks, had 4 Ks. Nothing like super impressive, but
against the Padres. Let's just, I mean,
but they kill lefties, don't they?
Yeah, back when they had VJ Upton killing things earlier this year. And, you know, Will Myers.
Melvin.
Yeah, or Melvin, sorry. Go ahead. Sorry, I don't mean to keep interrupting.
No. But I think he's a guy that, like, the home runs are definitely a concern. But I don't know. I feel like great athletes and great pitchers end up figuring it out at some point. And I'm not putting him in that great pitcher category. But I think that staff in general, that's been their big hurdle all year. The K numbers are strong. The walks are a little higher than I like. Those home runs have just decimated that Rays staff. And I can't imagine them coming the next year not figuring out something relating to that.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Smiley moving into next year?
I don't like him at all. Like, you know, there's some pitchers that are like aesthetically pleasing to watch pitch, and he's not one of those guys. He's actually on the opposite end for me. Like, you just get infuriated watching because the delivery's in my opinion, junk. And I mean, you can tell it looks like he's in pain out there, which with his injury history, he probably is. But like, I was a little bit backing off of when you said top 50 starter next year. But then I went in our league here. It's a quality start league, and I looked at the 50th best starting pitcher. It's Matt Moore right now. And I can't argue with that. I think he can be that next year for you. So I'm kind of on board with top 50 starter. I mean, just for reference, 51st best starter is Chris Archer, 52nd Siwa Kuma, 53 is Irvin Santana. I mean, I think he can put up better numbers than all those guys, and it wouldn't be too shocking next year. So I can get on board with top 50 starter. Because he's coming into that age now. If he can stay healthy, he's going to be 27 next year, 28, I believe. He's coming to that age where it's if he's time to put up numbers or not, and we'll see. Hopefully he can.
If he puts up a 3.5 ERA the rest of the way with solid strikeout numbers, you legitimately think that he's going to be in the top 50 realm instead of the top 40 on draft day?
Yes, no, he'll probably be top 40 if he does that.
Like, you know, I think he'll be a top 50 starter next year. I'm okay with that.
I think there's going to be a ton of arguments from people in the industry that'll hold him back. People are going to go, this guy still gives up too many homers. Because even in, you know, his last 5 starts, I think he's given up like at least 3 or 4 total home runs. So, I mean, people are going to argue that he gives up too many home runs, even when he's on. that he's too injury prone, that the delivery is bad, that he plays on a bad team because the Rays suck, Mike. And so he limits his win potential. I think there's going to be enough people in the industry to drive his price or keep his price suppressed going into next year, because people have been burnt. There have been a ton of people in the industry that have just been huge fans of Drew Smyly for so long and just have gotten burnt year after year after year, whether it's due to poor performance or due to injury. And so now they're just going to be like, screw it, I'm done with it. And I think that that is going to offer a buying opportunity. And I'm not saying that he's going to be a top 20, top 30 kind of guy, but I think he's going to return value on draft day where he'll probably end up going.
You know what we caught with well with his K percentage and walk percentage? I have a program that kind of does like different player comps. He comps really well with Kyle Hendricks. Their K percentage is almost identical with 23.6 and 22.3, and the walk percentage is exactly 6.3. Just something to note out there.
No, that's interesting to know. The only thing I think that takes away from Smyly is he doesn't have that outpitch like Hendricks does. And
that's fair. I'm just looking at this from like a numerical standpoint. No, scouting-wise, I wouldn't say they're the same pitcher on that level, but those when I put in my comp and Kyle Hendricks came up, if that out pitch comes or he develops it to another level, that's a question I'm going to ask myself. Do I think he's going to take that leap to Kyle Hendricks going to next year's draft?
I think that's a great comp. I think Smyly is a legitimate lefty version of Kyle Hendricks if he's on, you know. And, you know, we'll see going. I think this isn't as much of a question of where we think he'll end up, you know, in terms of value next year. It's more of a question of where the industry values him on draft day. Because, I mean, let's be honest, a lot of, you know, drafters use ranks that are set up for each individual site
exactly, when they're drafting.
And if they have him as a top 50 guy, then he maybe is a value. If they have him as a top 40 guy, then it's kind of like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, ADPs are extremely, especially early on, are extremely driven by whatever sites rank people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it'll all depend on kind of where the industry as a whole kind of ranks him. Let's move on to the last guy we're going to talk about today. We're running a little bit long, so we're going to cut off just kind of the end of the list. And we're going to talk about Freddie Freeman, who is actually putting together a pretty nice season, considering he's on one of the worst teams in baseball. 23 home runs already, 287 average. Matt, what are your thoughts on Freddie Freeman's season and what can we expect from him going forward?
Freddie Freeman's been great. He's kind of changing my opinion of him. He's hitting for more power than he's already got 23 homers, which is tied for his career high. He did it twice in 2012 and in 2013 he hit 23 homers, and he's got 23 homers now with about 40 games left. So, I mean, he should add a couple to that total. Every time, man, we have that MLB package, and I'm watching games with my dad, and my dad always tells me, Freddie Freeman, man, the Cardinals need to go get that dude. And every year I kept telling him, no, man, I don't think he's that great. But I had to tell him this year I'm kind of wrong about him. He said for way more power, like I said, and he needs to get out of Atlanta. That 54 RBIs is laughable for a guy with 23 homers. Like, that's nuts. But yeah, he's hitting the ball. He's a way better player than I thought coming in. He's going to be 27 next year. I think it's time to buy in dynasty formats.
I wonder if this is a guy too that could get moved off the Braves team. I mean, they're a team that they're building for the long term. And while they have him signed to a long term deal, he signed through 2021. His contract really jumps next year. It goes from $12 million in 2016 to $17 million, and then continuously kind of jumps up. He jumps up to $21 million in 2018 and then $22 million in 2020. So, I mean, this is a guy who's going to become more expensive starting next year. Is this a guy that the Braves could move? And if that happens, I mean, I think his value it becomes huge, I think, especially – like, could you imagine, you know, Edwin Encarnacion's a free agent. Could you imagine if, I don't think they've got the pieces necessarily to give away, but, you know, if he ended up in a place like Toronto,
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, it'd be a nice place for him. I mean, Atlanta's repeatedly said multiple times they're not going to trade him, but we know how all that goes. I mean,
yeah, I mean, someone gives him a good enough package.
Yeah.
I think he could easily get moved, especially, like I said, with the rising cost of his contract. So, Which
is still a good price for him, by the way. It's not like he's overpriced.
But, no, yeah. And especially with what we said at the kind of the dearth of options at first base in the league right now.
Yeah, it's so, all-time low probably.
but I think it's a possibility. This is a guy I'm buying. I was in on him this year. I don't worry as much about protection and those kind of things. I've been a big proponent of saying that protection is an overblown thing in fantasy and in real life baseball. So I like him. I have a number of shares of him, especially in NL only leagues. I like him going forward for the rest of this year, and I like him going to next year, especially if there is a chance he could get moved. Paul, what are your thoughts on Freeman?
I don't think he's getting – the only way he gets moved is if somehow Dave Stewart makes another deal with them, because he's the only guy that seems to know how to match Atlanta's insanely high value for players. But he's still only 26, so even though you're paying that escalating contract, you're paying it for his prime years. And the way the power's coming along this year, I don't think Atlanta thinks they're that far off. I don't think they think they're in it next year. But I think they have a reasonable expectation to think maybe in 2 to 3 years, when they still have Freeman for those dollars, and they're going to be paying dirt for those kind of rookies coming up, he's going to be the cornerstone of that franchise. So as much as I think for fantasy we want to see him moved, I don't see it happening unless – and I don't know who has the package to get him. Maybe the Dodgers have a package.
Houston,
you think?
I mean, I don't know if they would do it, especially because I don't know if Houston wants to spend $20 million a year when they've got guys in the system. But Houston's got the package.
I think St. Louis is a good fit. I already brought it up, but I mean, they have a hole at first. Moss is a good free agent, and they have a lot of young pitching in the minors.
Yeah, I think St. Louis would be a decent fit. I'm just kind of briefly looking at all the teams. I mean, I don't know if
Colorado.
Kansas City would do that. Colorado would be interesting, especially if they were to move one of their outfielders.
Definitely.
So if we're talking Houston, you got to start with probably Bregman and Reed just to start, right?
Oh, I don't know. I think that's way too much, but I mean, Freeman's good. But
I think Reed and Derek Fisher.
And probably a couple arms.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, if that was to happen, I mean, this is obviously complete speculation, you know, just shots in the dark. But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they try to cash in on what, you know, is, I mean, really kind of becoming a career year for him, in spite of the fact he's got no one around him in the lineup.
And things change if they get one OBP guy to bat in front of him. That will drastically impact his RBIs for next season. So that's something to monitor in Atlanta. If they get one guy batting ahead of him who's getting on base over 36% of the time, now you might see that those RBIs become a little bit more of a strength for him.
Yeah, I think that's really fair. Mike, what are your thoughts on Freddie Freeman?
First off, can we stop saying package every 2 seconds, because it's getting outrageous? And then on top of that, let's see. You know, Freeman is somebody that I was really wrong on this year. I think, you know, me personally, I don't think he gets traded at all. I don't think there's any chance he gets traded, because the Braves are opening up a new stadium next year. They've always had a very, you know, loving fan base. And when they open that stadium, they need somebody like Freeman there to be the cornerstone of their team. They have some nice pieces in the minors that they can bring up here these next few years. They, you know, Freeman's contract, I don't think, is too much for them. So I don't think that there's any way he gets traded. If he does, then he does. But that's just my opinion on that. You know, overall. Oh, and also based on lineup protection, Daniel Murphy, the aforementioned Daniel Murphy, all of a sudden hit, you know, crazy last year when Yoenis Cespedes was on fire behind him. And then he just so happens to be hitting crazy this year with Bryce Harper behind him. I don't think it's a coincidence.
Harper's not batting behind him anymore. Isn't he batting ahead of him?
Maybe, but regardless, you know, I think that that's a really good explanation as to why Murphy is all of a sudden becoming one of the best hitters in baseball. He's always been a strong hitter, but the fact that he had Yoenis Cespedes behind him last year, you know, I think really helped him get pitches to hit. And then I think
Then why is Harper struggling?
Because Harper is the one that's not getting pitched to as well. I mean, the Cubs literally pitched around him a whole game or a whole series.
Yeah, but that hasn't been happening for quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not lately, but I'm just saying, I think that it's up for debate whether lineup protection is a legit thing or not. And the Braves haven't been as bad of a lineup as people might think. They don't strike out a ton. They put the bats to the ball. You know, they're not very good in the power department or really anything, you know, in terms of runs scored. But they are good at putting the ball in play, you know, which is whatever. Either way, Freddie Freeman, I think, is his home road splits for his career haven't been outrageous. So I don't think that, you know, him being in Turner Field is a bad thing for the future. You know, he's somebody I was completely wrong on coming into this year. I did think that him being on the Braves was going to be a bad sign for his value. He's been a top 10 first baseman all year. I think he's going to be a top, you know, 7 guy going into next year based on his age and based on the, you know, power metrics trending up. You know, he's hitting lefties better than he has at any other time in his career. I'm buying him.
All right. Well, I think that is going to wrap us up. Paul, why don't you tell people where you can be reached on Twitter and then kind of just what you do over at FanGraphs and Rotographs.
Absolutely. You can reach me at Twitter at Paul Kostava. That's P-A-U-L-K-S-T-A-V-A. Almost forgot how to spell my name. You can usually catch me twice over the weekend doing bullpen reports. And also Friday afternoons, I usually do an article on first baseman. And then this week, I think tomorrow or Wednesday, I'll be doing the sleeper in the bust with Paul Sporer. And that's going to kind of become a regular thing. So be on the lookout for that as well.
Mike, why don't you tell people what you're working on, where you can be reached on Twitter?
Yeah, appreciate you coming on, Paul. It was nice to have you and hope you come on again.
Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. And you can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. Check out my daily matchups article on baseballhq.com. Check out my raise updates on Fantasy Pros. We have fantasy football coming, so check out the podcast for that. We had Scott Bogman and Christopher Welsh from the ITL podcast on this last week. Matt and I do our, you know, prospect podcast, you know, once every other week or so. So check all that out.
Matt, why don't you tell people where you can be reached and what you're working on?
MBTap24 on Twitter, and I've been catching up on fantasy football, listening to you guys. It's been great stuff. Doing the prospect pile with my boy Mike, even though I collect Pokemon. Maybe that'll be a topic for next week on what the number one rated Pokemon is. Who knows?
I don't collect them anymore. But it was something – it's like having old
baseball
cards.
Sure, Mike. Sure, yeah,
That's what they all say. But anyways, yeah, just having fun, living life, working too much. Want to talk baseball, hit me up.
And you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can read anything I write for football right now on friendsoffantasybenefits.com and anything I write for baseball over at FanGraphs, just like Paul. I just wrote up a kind of my do's and don'ts of trading that went up on Rotographs last week. Got some pretty good feedback, so definitely go check that out. No idea what I'm writing this week. Probably, I don't know, something. We'll see. So definitely check all that out. Check out the Fantasy Football Podcast. We're back. We're doing episodes. We had Bogman and the Welsh on this last week. We've got Sigmund Bloom coming up in a few days. Maybe even will be released the same day this is. So definitely check that out. We're going through division previews. Give us a rate and review on iTunes. That really helps us out. We got a couple new reviews. Really appreciate those of you who've been giving us 5 stars. Like I said, really definitely helps us out. Kind of rebuild what we lost with the old feed going into the new feed now. And then definitely go and check out our sponsor, officialfantasyrings.com. Use our promo code FWFB for 20% off at checkout. Don't go and get a trophy. Don't go and get a championship belt. You get a ring that you can carry around wherever you go, have with you. Flaunt, make your opponents kiss your ring, then punch them square in the jaw with it. So that is going to end it for us today. Big thanks for Paul Kostava coming on from FanGraphs. Really appreciate that. We'll definitely have you on again in the future.
Thanks so much, guys. This was a blast. I loved it.
Thanks.
Yeah,
man.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
For Mike, Matt, Paul, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.